Welcome to Soul Searching, the Soul Recruitment Podcast, where we tackle all sorts of great topics in the areas of recruitment, job searching, mindset, technology, marketing, culture, and lots more. It's amazing what you'll pick up. Thanks for joining me. Welcome back, everyone. It's Friday afternoon, just about, I think, 3 minutes after 12 o'clock. It's episode 54 of Soul Searching, the Soul Recruitment Podcast, and I'm thrilled to have a fantastic guest, Sabrina Husami, is in the house. How are you doing, Sabrina?
Really well, Darren. How are you?
I am very well, and thank you for joining me. And we had to reschedule this one a million times due to some technical issues, but I'm very happy that we made it happen.
Me too.
So for everyone out there, the topic of today is bringing inclusivity into recruitment. So Sabrina is the founder and CEO of Avanti Search. She has an impressive background in recruitment as well as diversity and inclusion, having spent the majority of her career leading talent acquisition functions across the APAC region. Sabrina launched Avanti Search in 2022 to provide clients with what many agencies cannot: strategic advice built from the perspective of an internal recruitment function. Sabrina also approaches recruitment with an inclusive lens honed over years of D&I consulting work. Sabrina chairs the City of Sydney's Disability Inclusion Advisory Panel and consults on disability inclusion for the Australian Museum. She's a published author, member of Mensa, former Miss World Australia, and former contestant on reality TV show The Apprentice. She's passionate about creating ongoing equity for people in the workplace. So welcome, Sabrina. You've been busy.
Thank you, Darren. It's been a busy and full life. I've been fortunate.
Very, very busy. But I'd love to kind of get a little bit of your backstory. I mean, you've done so many things and they're so different. How did you end up in recruitment, and why is inclusivity so interesting to you? Why are you so passionate about it? So love to tell us your story.
Yeah, I don't think there's a recruiter I know that chose to be a recruiter, you know, that went to university thinking
100%
to become mine or go fall into it. So mine was a very zigzaggy journey, as I'm sure is the case for most. I actually started my career as Miss Australia. That was my very first paid job, Darren.
Wow.
Which you believe. And when I say paid, we're talking like $500 a week just to keep the lights on whilst I travelled around the country, mainly doing charity work.
That was incredible.
The activity. Oh, yeah. Goodness. So I did that, and obviously one of the obvious things that comes out of the pageant world is women then going into entertainment.
Uh-huh.
And I was very fortunate. I came third at Miss World itself. So I was the first Aussie in about 20 years, yeah, to place in the top three at Miss World. Uh-huh. And so everyone was like, great, she's going to start her own swimwear brand or become a model or become an actress or something like that. But it was actually my ethnic background. I'm half Lebanese, half Indian. That kind of dictated where I would go with my career from there. Because in my background, you don't become an actress if you can avoid it. It's not the done thing for a lady.
You've got to get a real job.
Yeah, you've got to get a real job. Exactly. You're going to be a doctor or a lawyer, and you're very stock standard in that regard. Yeah. So I did end up going into the corporate world, but actually went into sales and sales leadership. Right. It's from there, interviewing for my sales teams, that I discovered a passion for the recruitment process. And one of the candidates I interviewed said to their recruitment agency, she's an incredible interviewer. Why don't you talk to her about a job? And so they did. And here we go. What has it been, 10 years in recruitment now?
There you go. It actually happens a lot. Like, a lot of people go for interviews for other jobs and end up being handpicked by the person that interviewed them to become a recruiter.
It's crazy,
not all of us can. Not all of us come from being Miss Australia or Miss World. So you've got us there.
Definitely. And then as far as the diversity inclusion passion piece goes for me, obviously since you come from a minority background, I was raised as Muslim, which was extremely interesting, being a Miss Australia, being Muslim 17 odd years ago. You can imagine the kind of interest that the media took in me. And I also have two types of disability. So I have a severe hearing impairment, and I also have bipolar type 2 disorder, which meant that as I started to become more comfortable disclosing that to people, I was met with all sorts of responses, some really positive, some very discriminatory, as I'm sure you can imagine. And that just made me feel even more passionate about the realm of inclusivity and what diversity actually means.
Love it. I love that. And so then what made you decide to start your own recruitment company?
So I was working insane hours as the head of talent acquisition for the second biggest wine company in the world.
Ooh.
My team was split between Australia and England, and so I was working Aussie hours to give love to the Australian team, and then I was doing the same hours for the English team. So working like a dog. And my fiance is also a recruiter, but he's always been agency side.
Uh-huh.
And I'd watch him twiddling his thumbs, you know, making money hand over fist. He's very, very good at what he does, but not having to put in nearly as much effort as I did. And so I thought, gosh, it might be time to start my own agency, particularly because, Darren, I don't know any other agencies that have a career internal recruiter leading the agency.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I think there's a real point of difference there, right? Because the way that we work when we're internal to a business is we're always about building the brand, understanding the manager's needs, advising them sometimes against those needs and saying, I don't think you really know what you want. Here's my idea of how we all plan for your team. And so now as an agency recruiter, to be able to challenge effectively like that with stakeholders does represent a point of difference.
Nice, nice. And did you ever study HR or not really? You just went into
I did a double degree in psychology and English literature. I thought I would become a child psychologist off the back of that degree and quickly discovered a deep hatred of psychology once I started studying it. So that was quickly kiboshed. And as I said, I got into sales instead.
Incredible. What a story. I love it. And I kind of want to dive a little bit further into this topic of inclusivity. So can you maybe expand on that for us? What do you mean when you say bringing inclusivity into recruitment? What does it mean to you?
For me, it means making sure that everyone is given equal standing and fair entry into the process. And once they are hired into a business, they're given every opportunity to be not just sat at the table, but given a true voice at that table. Right. So there's a famous quote that says, you know, diversity is asking everyone to the party, but inclusivity is then inviting them to dance.
Nice. I like that.
And that's what inclusivity is.
Okay.
Loads of different people. It's catering for them.
Absolutely. And where did you see the lack of this most? What prompted this passion?
Put it this way, Dan, when I was in Australia, just the fact that I was brought up Muslim meant that the media would overlook. I raised $5 million to charity. You know, I sat the Mensa test, became a member of Mensa just to give them something else to talk about.
Yeah.
But all they could focus on was, Muslim Miss Australia, like, how can this be?
Yeah.
Went to Miss World, came third, came back, and the first phone call I received from a journalist was, do you remember a sheikh called Sheikh Al-Hilali who made a famous comment about women being like uncovered meat and the men being like a cat but can't help but eat that meat? Do you remember that comment? Big uproar at the time. And so the first phone call I received from a journalist was to make a comment on his comment. I was like, why is an Australian beauty queen successfully returning from this world being asked to comment on what some sheikh has said, but just because of my religious background? I mean, let's say, I don't know, if you take Cardinal George Pell, do you think that the Christian Miss Australia of his time was asked for her opinion on his, So I think it's just that early discrimination made me realise that despite the fact that I was born in Australia, I'm different by virtue of my background in a negative way, and that really opened my eyes to it.
Nice. Okay, awesome. And so then in terms of recruitment or employment in general, what are some ideas, strategies, tips for actually making the process more inclusive? How do we actually put this into practice?
Well, great question. My top one is around removing barriers to entry. That's such a corporate term. What do I mean by removing barriers to entry? I'm not one of those recruiters that believes in tokenistic inclusivity, where you say, for example, I will only interview 3 women and 3 men.
Yep.
Or I will have two people of a diverse cultural background on my interview panel and two people of a local background. I just think that that numbers game, as I said, is so tokenistic. I hate it.
That's right.
So what I typically say is the best way to make sure that you have an inclusive recruitment process and actually attracting and then retaining diverse talent is to look at what happens early in the funnel of your recruitment activity.
Yep.
For example, if you advertise a role and you list more than 6 bullet points in the requirements portion of that ad, female candidates tend to discount themselves and not apply for the role.
I've heard this before.
There you go.
I have heard that before. Interesting.
It's crazy. It's apparently it's more female nature to look at a list of things and say, oh gosh, I only meet 2 out of those 10 things. I'm not going to get the job. Whereas a male candidate more likely will say, oh, mate, I've got 2 out of the 10. Let's give it a red hot go. I'm going to apply for the role.
Can't hurt. Let's try.
Statistically, if it's more than 6 of those requirements, you see the female candidate applicant rate drop off significantly.
Wow.
So that's such a simple thing. Keep the requirements list as 6 or less points. Another really good way to reduce barrier to entry is to think about the assessment part of your recruitment process, if there is one. Mm-hmm. For example, I've worked with a lot of tech companies that require their developers to sit 2, sometimes 3 or 4 hour long technical tests.
Yep.
And then they complain that there aren't enough females in tech and they really want to see more female candidates and where are they all and why don't they get hired? A lot of young mums who are stuck at home with the child caring duties and literally not afford to perform the way someone who isn't can when they're sitting 4 hours straight test at home. You know what I mean? It's just not possible. Right. They just either they refuse to do it or they do it poorly.
Yep.
And it becomes an automatic barrier to entry.
Yep.
So hopefully that's something
to help. Tailored enough to the different.
Tailor your ads so that they're more appealing. Look at those assessment processes that might be a barricade without you realizing it to certain types of individual. Those are 2 really easy tips.
Right. And then what about once that initial stage has already passed and people are starting to interview, what are some strategies for that side of the process?
So one of the things that we talk about time and time again when it comes to gender equality is pay disparity. And I think one of the best things that interviewers can do is to remove their bargaining mindset and put in their, I'm going to be fair to you and your career mindset.
Gotcha.
What do I mean by that? Oftentimes, as you probably know, women are paid less than men. And they'll be interviewed for a role and say, look, I'm on 9K and, you know, I'm not expecting much more than that for this next role. And the interviewer who might have a role that pays $110,000 will go, $90,000, that's a bargain. I'm going to snuff that candidate out, that mark. And they perpetuate this low paid cycle for that candidate. So the advice is, no, put your I'm a good person and I've got to change the cycle hat on and say, I appreciate that you may have been paid this before and you're willing to accept that kind of mark again. But for the work you'd be doing this role, we could actually pay 100, perhaps even 110 for your skill set. And that's what I'd recommend we pay you. And the amount of times I've done that with a candidate, even when I was internal, and the awe and the appreciation that comes out of that individual, it wasn't always women, by the way, Dan. Sometimes it's guys doing the same thing.
Absolutely, for sure.
Yeah, just underselling themselves.
That are being underpaid, you know, all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and just the gratefulness and that light bulb moment where they're like, that's not true. Why am I sitting here saying that I'm willing to take less when I know that the job pays this much? So, yes, just be the bigger person. Change that cycle. You have the power to do so. So use that power wisely.
Love that. Beautiful. And in terms of the actual mix or blend of a team, do you have any stats or do you have any insights into what makes a good team in terms of the percentage of women versus men and all that kind of thing?
No, God, as I said, the numbers game, I hate it so much. But what I will say is there's a really useful exercise that you can do with some of your leadership team. And that is, it's called the circle of 6. So you basically say, I want you to think of the 6 people in your personal life who are the closest to you.
Nice.
Who are not family members. Anyone who's close to you that's not actually blood family. And I want you to put a tick next to each of those six names if they come from the same ethnicity as you, they're a similar age range, they're the same gender, they had a similar education, they work at a similar professional level. And then review, have a look at how many ticks you actually have next to these six individuals. Typically, leaders will find that they have a lot in common with the six people that are closest to them. So they have lots of ticks, you know, same background, same gender, same age, same schooling, etc.
That's natural. That's just, that's culture.
That's natural. Absolutely. So natural. But then how does that play out when it comes to picking team members?
That's right.
Hiring people into their business. Their natural trust levels tend to, you know, incline themselves towards people who are similar to themselves. So we've probably all heard of this phrase, hiring like for like, hiring someone who fits the same mold as you. And what that tends to do then is, have very same teams, which statistically are far lower in their productivity and business outcomes. So I don't have numbers for you, Darren, but I do recall that of all of the Fortune 500 companies in the world that have more of a balance in their leadership team of both ethnic and gender diversity, something like 70% of the top 100 that are doing the best have the diversity, whereas the others that are doing more poorly.
Love it. Well, I mean, hopefully that gives the audience a little bit more insight into some food for thought in how they recruit, in how they build their teams. I love some of those insights that you shared with us. And I think it's very important that, inclusivity is top of mind when people are building teams these days, and it's going to continue to be the same way. But I kind of want to move the conversation a little into the recruitment world. Obviously, you started Avanti Search in 2022. I'd love for you to tell us a bit more about what you do and what do you think makes a good recruitment company, or what makes Avanti different from everyone else?
I recruit all role types from front office through to C-suite. So we do a lot of executive search for everything under that banner as well for white-collar businesses. That's my specialty.
Nice.
So it's industry agnostic. It could be a tech company. It could be a finance company. I do a lot of not-for-profit as well. And they might say to me, Sabrina, I need my finance manager as well as my head of sales and also my accounts receivable person, and I'll hire all three for them. The beauty of that is that you tend to get to know a business really well if you have to recruit for several different teams within that business. And so, again, you start to operate like you're part of their internal recruitment team.
Yes.
You have to know how sales operates, what finance does, why the GM is wanting to do what they're doing, what's the business's vision, and you become a true partner to them in doing so. So that is the point of difference. As I said, I've led internal team functions for so much of my career, and I've really tried to bring that lens to my work with businesses. And then, of course, there is that diversity and inclusion factor where I myself in my process are as inclusive as possible. And so you do tend to see more of a diverse candidate pool when you work with me.
And how many in the team at Avanti?
It is myself and my very recently joined fiance, James. Has been a recruiter. As I said, he was my inspiration to start the agency.
Nice.
He has been a recruiter for about 12 years now in the tech and digital space. So between my my generalist capability and his specialist capability, got a lot of experience, and then I have a wonderful junior consultant working underneath me as well, the generalist.
Ah, great. So you're growing. Yeah. That's fantastic. Love it.
Yeah.
And it's only been a year and a half.
Yeah.
Wow. How did you find the last few years in terms of the pandemic?
It's been a roller coaster, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, pandemic was horrendous, obviously, for candidates everywhere. And businesses, good God, like they were letting go of people that they admired because they just couldn't keep up with the lack of profitability. And so when that finally turned around, very interesting, particularly with sales and talent acquisition, Darren, because during the pandemic, businesses stopped recruiting and they stopped selling. So they let go of their recruiters and they let go of their sales teams. A year on, so we're talking early 2022, all of those roles that had been made redundant could be re-recruited for.
That's right.
And the amount of companies just thirsty for that kind of talent and the lack of that talent on the market meant that agencies were in such high demand.
I remember.
We were really valued for the skill set that we brought.
Yep.
here we are 1.5 years on and the market is completely flipped. So what we're seeing is businesses are still reticent. They're still letting go of a lot of their poor performing staff, but that's the key. We're in the pandemic, they were letting go of any staff that they couldn't
right.
because that division stopped. Now they're being very selective, letting go of all of their poor performers, and therefore there's a glut of candidates on the market,
yep.
most of whom are not the best candidates in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So employers have been given this sense of false security that if they put up an ad and they're having their 10 applicants last year, they have 150 now, and they're like, we don't need agencies. This is great. We've got so many people applying to this role. But then what they inevitably are finding, I'm hearing this again and again from my clients, is, Sabrina, where is the quality? Like this just joke applicants, you know, I have McDonald's workers applying for CEO roles. Like, I don't know what is going wrong in this market, but it's just, it's not the one. And so they do tend to then.
Yeah, I've been recruiting for about 20 years and I have never seen a market like this.
It's ridiculous. I know so many successful recruiters struggling right now and so many good candidates. Just failing to find a great job because suddenly there's so many of them on the market, good and bad.
Now, I want to ask you a very interesting question, a fun one, but hopefully, you know, something that's going to be really insightful. You know, coming from that journey and that process of being Miss Australia and entering in Miss World, what did you learn about sales and about business?
Ooh, I love this question. I learned that perception is reality. So what do I mean by that? If you can back your capability with a really strong presentation of that capability through the way you talk, the delivery of your outcomes, but also the method for which you deliver, that tends to bolster confidence more than anything else in business. And secondly, it's true what they say, Darren, your network is your net worth.
That's
true. If you know people, that is going to get you so much further in business and in sales than anything else I think I've seen.
Yep.
Because people buy from people. We value relationships, not necessarily products and services.
Yeah, love it. And what about from your self-development point of view, because I'm assuming that the process would be grueling back then. Absolutely grueling. And, there must have been days when you think, what the hell am I doing? Why am I doing this? What kind of a life is this? Like, and so what did you tell yourself and what did you learn about your own resilience and, where did you grow in that process?
Wonderful question. I was Miss Australia at a time that my mother was going through extreme depression. She has type 1 bipolar. And for a good 10-year period, she was suicidal. She was in and out of hospital. She was even institutionalized at one point.
Wow.
Yes, and I went through the pageant at the same time as
this
bout of depression.
Sorry,
and that taught me more than anything because I was living out of a suitcase I was 20, under immense pressure, suddenly in the media spotlight, having to answer for an entire religion that I barely related to, as well as being a national contender for, an international title. And it taught me that firstly, the family relationship is something you can never neglect, no matter how much pressure you have on your plate. But secondly, I am extremely capable of multitasking and remaining compassionate towards others at the same time. And it's an important thing to do both. You can juggle a lot and still have time and care for others. And I think the reason I could do both is because I still remember to care for me. I always took time at the end of my day to call the people that I love that would mentally support me or eat the food that gave me comfort to my very depths of my heart, whatever that self-care meant at the time kept me going.
That
meant I could keep everything else.
Yeah, I love that. So you've kind of, we've spoken about empathy towards others and empathy towards yourself. So important.
So underrated, honestly. Yep.
Absolutely.
I think we tend to feel guilty. Yes.
That age, it's only going to get more and more important because I think, technology will allow us to do most things, but the human side of things, the empathy and the human interaction, the human skills are the only things that are going to separate us or differentiate us from everybody else.
Absolutely agree. This is why I have no fear, and I reckon you probably feel the same way, Darren. No fear that AI will displace recruitment in the future.
Absolutely.
None. Because that human element is critical to a good recruitment process.
A good recruitment process and a good sales process in general. You know, you have to have a person that is, as you say, empathetic towards the other party, helps negotiate whatever needs need to be negotiated. There has to be a facilitator. A computer cannot do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. Great insights from you. So tell us a bit more about just owning a small business. What's that like nowadays that you've come from working in the corporate world, and what's it like owning your own recruitment business now?
The flexibility is paramount to none. I absolutely adore how much I get to run my own schedule, and I tend to be more productive as a result, because rather than being tied to my laptop during business hours, I can work and dip in and out of my most productive hours myself. So that's incredible.
What are you, an early riser? What are your general?
I'm a night owl, so I will start late, finish late. Yeah.
Okay. I used to be like you, and then I've totally changed.
How did you manage that?
I don't know. Secret. I just tried, and I just became so passionate about it, and I fell in love with getting up at 5:30 in the morning.
This sounds like my worst nightmare.
And I absolutely love it. I swear by it, but it's not for everybody.
I'm about to throw my entire, sleep schedule out of loop because, Darren, we've just sold our house and we're going to be digital nomads for the remainder of the year. So we'll be working out of Europe, the States, Latin America. It's just going to be very, very interesting.
That's another advantage of having your own business. You can do that.
Correct. That's what I was going to come to, just the travel that we've been able to do since starting Avanti has been incredible. Yeah. And also being able to really stick to your own ethics and values all the time is more fulfilling, I think, than most people realize until they start their business. Because when you're, particularly if you're in a bigger corporate, you're always at the edict of the higher ups, right? There's always a trickle down.
What's the word? You're towing the company line.
Yes.
You're always towing the company line,
It's so true. Whereas now we can just tell our truth instead, really live our values. Yep. Which is incredible. I don't feel like I'm fighting an uphill battle to have fair processes or to do things really ethically. And I watch a lot of my agency mates make some really dodgy calls to get candidates across the line, and I get to go, no, I own my own business, but I have to work for someone else in the agency, and therefore I can place my values over the sale when I think it's the right thing to do. And that's a really powerful.
It definitely comes with its own challenges and its own
definitely
responsibilities that, you wouldn't have otherwise, but it does come with that, I won't say work-life balance, I'll just say balance.
True, mate. It's true. Yeah. And you know what? If you're not self-motivated, owning a business is just not for you. Yeah. Because there's no one to crack the whip, right? You've just got to do it for yourself. Totally. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that's been a big one, is learning that I actually have self-discipline. And I'm not as big of a procrastinator as I thought I am. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you take, your journey all the way back to the beginning, you were self-disciplined back then.
Great point. I was driven. That's the word I would use. I was very driven from day one.
Okay. Interesting. And where do you think that drive came from?
Overachieving parents. Like, I had extremely intelligent parents. My father was a business owner from a very young age himself, and dabbled in a lot. He had hugely successful racehorse business.
Oh, wow.
He had a very successful gemstone mining business, and he was a journalist as a side hustle.
Wow.
So really inspiring man. Yeah. Mum brought myself and my sister up pretty much single-handedly while he did all of that. And she came to Australia from India when she was in her early 20s with my father without speaking English. And she just learned the language. She built a home and a friendship circle here. Oh. And she's just an incredibly strong, opinionated, intelligent woman. So the two of them together, I would always say to my sister and I, we're not, in this case, Darren, they were not stock standard stereotypes of the culture. They never said to us, oh, we should have tried again to have a son, which typically is quite important in our culture. They always said, we've been blessed with two amazing girls, nice. And you two can do anything you want. You put your mind to it, I promise you, you'll achieve it. And so that kind of just gives you this backing of self-belief, because your parents are so convinced
Yep.
That you've just got the goods. You know what I mean?
That's fantastic. Yep.
Yeah.
It's so important. You know, confidence is everything, you know, and, you know, I don't have kids, but when you bring up kids, I think confidence is so important.
Agreed.
Love it. Hi, guys. Just a quick message. I'm always on the lookout for engineers in the managed services space across Australia. Support engineers, systems engineers, network engineers, and solution consultants. I only work with the best companies that are going places, really value their staff, have great techs, and offer stacks of training and other benefits. Up to $1,000 for successful referrals. Who do you know? Feel free to give me a buzz, 0414 659 800. But right now, back to the conversation. Well, Sabrina, it's been an absolute pleasure. Tell us a bit more about how we can find you and work with you at Avanti and, you know, anything else that you might want to add.
Yeah, you can look me up on LinkedIn. You can find me at the website, which is www.avantisearch.com.au, or you can even call or text me directly on 0425-040404.
Love it, love it. And I always like to give my guest the last word. I mean, we've covered a lot today. We've talked about inclusivity. We've talked about personal drive. We've talked about human skills. We've talked about the differences in recruitment from an internal and an external point of view. What would you like to leave the audience with? Any last words or any last insights or tips?
I think one of the most important things I've discovered through my career is bringing your personality to the table is everything. And Darren, you're a perfect example of that. People can't see what Darren's like on this camera right now. I'm looking at him as we speak, and he's just all smiles, so much energy. There's a real interest and joy and passion when he speaks and asks questions. And that level of personality and intimacy, I think, is incredibly important when we do business, because again, people buy from people and they value relationships. So that's something I've learned from a very young age. I used to be super polished and professional and a little bit too corporate, I believe. And I learned to break down that polish and be much more myself.
I love that. And I thank you again for your lovely words. And it reminds me of a great quote by, I think it was Oscar Wilde, said, be yourself, everybody else is taken.
Yes, absolutely.
It's such a great quote, and it's so powerful, because I 100% agree with you. Like, when I was younger as well, you know, we used to walk around in the suit with a compendium and we used to say the same things. We were just robots.
Mate, try being a beauty queen on top of that.
That's right.
Just sort of be the epitome of perfection. That's a lot. Right.
But nowadays, you know, the world has changed and it's more about quality and authenticity.
Yes.
Just being yourself and being less polished, like removing the layers rather than putting them on. I think people want to know who you are behind the scenes. They don't want to know, you know, about the persona that you're building. They want to know who you really are.
Yes. And thank you, pandemic. One of the beautiful things for us was this opportunity to look into people's homes, because everyone's working from home all of a sudden. You could see their background, you could see their kids, you could see their pets. You know, they'd be dressed down for once, people wearing trappies underneath the camera.
Like boots.
Boots. Yeah. It really broke away from that. This is my work self. This is my personal self. They are two incredibly different individuals, way of operating.
Definitely. Well, Sabrina, I just want to thank you again. It's been a lovely conversation. It's been delightful to chat with you. You've given us some incredible insights from your journey along the way. If anybody wants to work with Sabrina or Avanti, please check out all the links that I'll put in the show notes. And she'd be fantastic to work with. And she really knows her stuff and she really cares. So everyone out there, thank you. But everyone out there, hope you had a fantastic one. Hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Sabrina, thank you again.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Darren.
My pleasure. And everybody have a fantastic weekend. And we'll see you very, very soon for the next episode of Soul Searching, the Soul Recruitment Podcast. Bye for now. Thanks again for joining me for another episode of Soul Searching, the Soul Recruitment Podcast. If you'd like to join me as a guest on the show, I would be delighted to collaborate. Feel free to buzz me on 0414 659 800 or email me on darren@soulrecruitment.com.au. I'm always on the lookout for great guests who can share their stories and expertise with my community. But for now though, have a fantastic day and I'll see you next time.